This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
I'm about to be joined on the line by Kaya Sithole, who is, of course, Power Perspective host here on Power 98.7, but also he is the treasurer at the Association of Black Securities and Investment Professionals, APSIP. So I'm going to be tapping into that type of hat he wears and just discuss some developments at the headquarters of APSA. Serious conversations and discussions happening about the future of their chief executive officer, Daniel Minele, who has been in office for just under 16 months. And Kaya Sithole, good morning, Jobe.
I don't know if it's a good morning, but yeah.
It depends where you are sitting on the side of the highway, I suppose.
Yeah, it's tough, but yeah. Here we are. We have to deal with it as it comes.
I mean, Kaya, we have to deal with it as it comes. APSA has sort of sent out a communique now saying there are discussions that are underway on a suitable separation arrangement, and that we should expect a more detailed briefing after midday. How have we arrived at this point?
It's always going to be a very difficult story to track. And what makes such stories remarkably difficult is that the one thing that we do very well in corporate South Africa is muzzle people and cloak them in these non-disclosure agreements, which makes the story, as it turns out, very difficult to track from an outsider's perspective. But that being said, what we do see is that APSA is probably what you may call an outlier in the banking circles, in that twice in its recent history, it has had to go outside to try and find a CEO.
Yeah.
When Steve Boysen left in 2009, he was replaced by Maria Ramos, who had been at Transnet immediately before then. She led it for about a 10-year period. And then when she said that she was retiring at the beginning of 2019, they then again had this leadership vacuum for about almost a year. And then they eventually said they'd appointed Daniel Minele, who had been at the Reserve Bank, so he then became the CEO. So what makes them an outlier is that what you'll see with all the other banks in particular is that they all gravitate towards hiring an insider.
Mm.
So whether it's through proper succession planning, whether it's because they groom people properly, the instinctive reaction is to always look inside, and only in rare circumstances do you see them going outside. So that's the main thing, that APSA has always been an outlier.
Mm.
The consequences of that, of course, are multidimensional. And the very first thing is always the question of the school fees that we refer to. And the school fees are simply a question of if a person that has not been part of an institution then arrives to lead that institution, they definitely won't be able to know where all the doors are, where all the rooms are overnight. So that takes a bit of a learning curve.
Mm.
And it's always the question of how long and how steep that learning curve before you enable that person to then thrive and really imprint their own legacy onto that institution.
Kaya, so I mean, you are raising something very important, because then just shortly after his arrival, then COVID-19 hits, and that throws many institutions out of, you know, course, and needing to make sure you put and recalibrate the organization to still function under the COVID-19 moments. And here we are told that chief at issue is the strategic direction that was being discussed within the corridors of power there, where to go and how to deal in part with COVID-19 and make the bank more agile, as we've been using that word during the pandemic a lot. Do you think that might have influenced us arriving at this point in time, because decisions had to be made quickly, and as you suggest, maybe he had not tapped into the power blocks and divisions that may be there to ensure that he's able to take as many people along as possible?
Well, I think the biggest issue and the biggest trick is that APSA could legitimately say was really dealing with two strategies. The first strategy was the one relating to the separation from Barclays,
yeah,
because obviously that had required them to do things differently and to try and figure out what type of institution they wanted to have after the Barclays agreement. So that is something that had started during the last days of Maria Ramos and was largely finished by the beginning of last year. So that's the one strategic question. And then there was the secondary question of, well, what happens after the separation is finalized? So Absa would have been proactively working on the question of, okay, what's our new strategy now that we are separate standalone entity? From what we heard, they came up with this idea of Africanacity, which essentially means that they wanted to be a pan-African institution and maybe acquire some of the branches that had been part of the Barclays Africa Group. So that was a strategy that was essentially in play. Now, when COVID-19 happens, it then unfortunately forces absolutely everybody to revisit the key pillars of that strategy, to understand what the regulatory directives of the time would be relating to issues like the payments of dividends and how banks are supposed to behave. So it was a very steep learning curve, especially for someone who had just started. And I don't think that on its own did him any favors.
Now, of course, Kaya, from a transformation point of view, I mean, I'm sure as APSIP and other related organizations, professional organizations that are interested in questions of transformation, this might just seemingly be another big blow for the dealings of transformation and, you know, ascendancy of black executives into powerful positions in the private sector.
Yeah, I think the way the world works is that obviously there are positions that are so prominent that when somebody talks about CEOs, for example, we all tend to know who they are and we all tend to know what they look like. But obviously the definition of transformation and the manifestation of transformation is not merely a question of how many black CEOs you have, because that will literally mean that just put black CEOs throughout the JSE and transformation is solved. So that's clearly not the way it ought to be measured and not the way it ought to be understood. But what we do know is that there are significant benefits associated with an institution that is able to identify a black leader of stature and then say, we are so committed to transformation, we've actually found a person who's going to lead us through that particular process, and this is a person who has an intimate understanding of what transformation is all about. So there are clearly upsides associated with institutions having black leaders, because I think when you have an institution that says we've got a board of directors made up of 17 white men, for example, but we're committed to transformation, it does tend to sound quite hollow as a conversation. So there's clearly a benefit associated with them not only saying that they're committed to it, but them proving it by actually illustrating and exhibiting how they make it happen. So that's a key issue. So whenever, obviously, there is an exit at that leadership structure, it doesn't necessarily mean that overnight an institution was transformed yesterday and suddenly isn't transformed the day after. But rather, it invites us to ask questions around whether there is indeed a pipeline of black executives within that institution that could either be promoted or seamlessly transition into that process. But yes, as you saw in the case of African Bank earlier this year, and now as we're clearly seeing in the case of Absa, it is indeed a setback for transformation, because the way the exits have been handled in particular has been of great concern to us.
Now, Kaya, you talk about, you know, transformation not just only reflected in the one individual who is actually exiting. I mean, some people starting to say now, you know, one of the weaknesses perhaps of CEO Daniel Minelle was that when he was presented with an opportunity to fill up some key important executive posts, he didn't act swiftly enough. Some saying there are a number of vacancies that are there in the executive, and no doubt that also is going to be looked at. We saw the death of Peter Matlare, which also impacted the structure. I mean, APSA, where do they find themselves now in terms of needing to receive a person who will probably steer the ship to a point of stability at a leadership level?
Look, I think the key issue is that, unfortunately, hiring a person of that seniority within a banking institution is not just a matter of going through CVs and saying, yeah, that's the one that I'm going to take. Given the importance of the safe custody of depositors' funds, for example, within banking institutions, it's a very, very stringent process. So you probably don't have a huge pipeline of people that are firstly available at that point in time when you're looking, willing to take the job and are going to pass the vetting processes of the Reserve Bank in particular. So it's not a straightforward exercise. But obviously, for any institution to have long leadership vacuums is not desirable at all. And the question that obviously Daniel would have to interrogate at some point in time is whether he acted swiftly enough to deal with the question of whatever gaps existed in his leadership structure, and whether that on its own didn't imperil his chances of really just getting his foot on the ground within the APSA structures.
And I mean, Kaya, you do note, you noted in the beginning, when you come into a new organization, you do really need to immerse yourself in it. And he had come in an organization that already seemingly had tensions. I mean, if you remember how Phakamani Hadebe left and went on to Eskom, it does seem that there has been this worrying point. And I would just wonder, what type of engagements, from an APSIP point of view, are you able to have with the private sector to try and understand the root causes of some of these moments of tension and really difficulty in some instances?
It's not always an easy task, mainly because in most cases you only discover that there are issues once literally the issues have escalated. No one comes and reaches out at the first engagement and say, hey, we've had a difference of opinion that we think might escalate. So in most cases, by the time you get to hear that something may need to be addressed, it is probably too late. So what you'll remember is that at the beginning of the year, we then came up with this idea of executive leadership conversation, where we actually wanted to find out from institutions that aren't at a crisis point yet to ask them how exactly they are dealing with questions of leadership transitions and leadership elevation, leadership succession, and whatever prevailing tensions there are. And we obviously heard from the Eskom Pension and Pension Provident Fund, for example, what they regarded as the issues that had led to the resignation of their chief executive officer. When you listen to the UCT case study, they seem to have found a way of actually finding out what the boundaries are for the chair, for the council, and for the vice chancellor, who's the de facto CEO. So the lessons are manifest and they're quite varied. There isn't a singular model that seems to be working. But from our view as APSIP, what we really need to be able to start doing is open up conversations that say to people, by the way, this is how leadership tensions develop, and this is how we think, based on the case studies that we've seen, these things need to be resolved. So in relation to African Bank, we had some very robust engagements. We challenged them on the way they handled the process, and we asked some very important and some very difficult questions. And we're pleased to see, even last week, that they then did appoint a new CEO, Kennedy Pungane, who's actually a former president of APSIP. They've also started rebolstering their board. They've appointed a black female chartered accountant as a member of the board, because we had raised the issue that actually it looked like they had engaged in this habit of simply putting black, white males as board members. So we do see some small gains, but of course, it's going to be an institutional and a sectoral overhaul that we need to see in order for us to say we're making strides in transformation.
What do you think are the two key big questions you will be having for APSA in the near future?
I think obviously for us, the very simple question is, what support systems would an institution like that put in place when they firstly have a new CEO, but more importantly, a CEO who hasn't been part of the furniture? Because I do think that in the world that we live in, you do need that sort of strategic support that says, hey, we are going to back you as you go through your learning motions, as you sort of earn your school fees, because there may be a misstep here or there. You may have thought this institution was about this, but when you engage with it, you discover that it's about that. So nobody expects perfection overnight. And it's simply a question of how long is that runway that we provide to leaders, particularly black leaders that are coming from other institutions, and whether enough of that carpet has been actually been cultivated to enable a person to thrive. Because if we find that there isn't much of that support, well, it's simply a question of a revolving door. And let us face it, by now, APSA will be looking for its third CEO in less than 3 years. And that is an extraordinary churn that is simply undesirable and does unfortunately call into question the ability of the board as it stands right now to manage succession and transitions.
Kaya, you are familiar with Powerhouse. I'm going to go for a short ad break and come back to you. And I want us to talk about, why are we seeing some people saying this is arguably the story of the day, the story of the week, and why should people care? I'm in conversation with colleague Kaya Sithole. Developments at APSA, really there seems imminent that an announcement is coming after midday to detail the separation between the bank and its CEO, Daniel Minele. That line is 0861987000. Tweet me at Lukona Mguni, #PowerTalk.
You're listening to Power Talk, 9 a.m. to noon.
Well, it is almost 22 minutes past 10 this morning here on Power Talk as we dissect all things around this developing story at Absa. Literally less than 16 months and the CEO seems to be literally exiting that door. Kaya, why is this an important story for the country and why should the listener even be interested in following it?
I think what makes it an important story for the country is that a lot of people look at the financial sector in particular, it being the most intersectional of all the economic sectors, which literally touches everyone's lives. We do have an interest into what happens then. And I think what makes the banks particularly important is that we all want some stability in the banking sector. And of course, one of the variables, one of the dimensions of stability relates to the questions of leadership. So when you see an institution that seems to be really struggling to find that long-term CEO who's able to then hold it together for, you know, a substantive period of time, we have to start getting concerned about what it all means for the institution. It is probably very disruptive for the people that work within APSA themselves, who are now thinking, okay, at some point in time, we need to know where we're headed. And if there's going to be a leadership vacuum, which is what we saw after the exit of Maria Ramos, and then a short turner, which is what we've seen now, it does create anxiety for the people that work within that institution. And that's not desirable for anyone. That's the first part. And I think obviously the secondary part always relates to the questions of whether we have found the right model within corporate South Africa to actually support Black executive leaders in particular, because if you go and look at the list of the JSE CEOs today, if you look at the top 100 or even the top 14, you struggle to find Black CEOs, you struggle to find Black executive directors. So the transformation pathway of the listed private sector in particular still leaves a lot to be desired. Everybody can say that we've got these quotas, if you want to call them, of we should have so many people representing these demographics within the structures, but we're not there yet. So whenever you see one leaving and one that senior, it does create anxieties about whether the systems are going to organically get themselves there, or whether you need other types of interventions that are going to get us to something that resembles the demographics of South Africa.
Absolutely. I mean, questions of pipeline, career development, and I suppose out of frustration, some people then say, well, when are we going to get to a point where we see other banks that are owned perhaps by Africans, dominated by them, commercial banks, when are we going to break the back of the Big Four and so on? I mean, is that even a conversation that you think, Kaya, is going to one day reach fruition?
Yeah, it's a fight I've been having with a lot of politicians, because unfortunately, what tends to happen here is that there is, in most cases, a conflation of conversations around what exactly it is that people are looking for. So when people say that they want a Black bank, for example, and then you ask them, what is this variable that you're looking for? Are you simply looking at a question of ownership? And if I put together a bank that is owned by Black people and then hired all white executives, would that be what people are looking for? And the answers are not very clear. Alternatively, people always argue that, well, even within the existing banking systems, no one can prohibit you and I from buying shares. So maybe the question should be, how do we rally enough resources for us to then say, we as Black people are the majority shareholder in this particular institution, so therefore we want to be able to influence the way things work. So it's always a conversation that just doesn't have a static reference point. So, of course, I think if there were institutions that were organically built from scratch by Black people, then everybody would say, we built that, it's one of our own. Mm. What we do know is that the big prominent banks in South Africa, if you look at their history, there were clearly institutions that were started by white people in the main, and that's just the reality of our history. And it's always been a question of, do we then want to create a parallel structure that we're then going to say, this one is essentially something that resonates with us because we built it from scratch and we built it to an institution of stature, or do we simply say, well, from the existing ones, we actually want to have a greater say through levels of ownership, for example, and levels of management and leadership. So it's always a multidimensional conversation. There's nothing wrong with starting a Black bank, but even if you had one, it will still be competing with these other ones, and the questions will always remain in one way or another. So it's just a fluid conversation. Eh?
Okay, let's listen in on Miesha Kaya quickly. Miesha, good morning.
Morning, Lukona, and morning to Kaya. Great to hear him in the daytime. Lukona, lastly.
Yes, Buti.
You need to consult Gogo Machike to do umsebenzi for you on the name and surname. Otherwise, nobody's going to get them right.
I hope he's listening. Wow. He often is listening. So, Gogo Machike, please, I'll be in your consultation chambers soon.
Please, umsebenzi. Kaya, to Kaya, listen, Lukona, I think we are more concerned about black faces. If I ask you a question, we've had so many CEOs in the private sector, they don't change the fundamentals and tiles and the generics of these organizations. Blacks are not even welcome in the banks. All they do is to deposit cash and go. They don't get loans. They don't get absolutely nothing. So I think we need to retrick our brains that not only the faces, you look even Vodacom, you can have them, you can even have them as part of the board. Have they paid Magate? You'll see every institution, even you can have 10 black CEOs at once in APSA. Is APSA going to be open to black businesses, black aspirations, black lives, everything? Is it going to happen? It's not going to happen. So I think we need to think otherwise because we are more sucked in and concerned about black faces who don't bring any change, who do not bring absolutely nothing on the table. So I think we need a rethinking.
Okay, Miyeshe, that's an important point you're making. I mean, Kaya, really, black leaders come in, not necessarily change the fundamentals, as Miyeshe is saying.
Yeah, and I think that the reality here is that for far too many cases, we've seen black executive leaders rise to the top of these institutions only for them to focus on the stability of the institution, which in their view seems to be, let me keep things as they are. So you hardly ever find a disruptive leader that says, hey, actually, these are the things that need to be changed. Before I got into this institution, this is what my anxieties were. I felt that the support was not being given to black entrepreneurs, for example. So let me make it happen. So you struggle to find a person who can be called a disruptive leader. But that's obviously very clear to understand in that if I went to an interview and told the board of directors that I'm going to disrupt X, Y, and Z, there's definitely no way I'll ever get the job.
Kaya, we are mostly almost out of time, but just to ask a quick one, from a comms point of view, what should we expect from MAPS? Are we just going to get a statement or probably there'll be a proper press briefing later today?
I doubt we're going to get a proper press briefing. I think a statement that simply says we've reached a meeting of the minds and decided to part ways is probably the most elegant way to do it, because in a press briefing, the very first question will be, how on earth did you get it so wrong within such a short period of time? And I do not believe that the board of APSA has got an answer to that.
Kaya Stole, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
That's Kaya Stole, Power Perspective host, of course, here at Power 98.7 every day between 8 and 11 p.m. Monday to Thursday. And on Sundays, 9 to 11. Also, treasurer of APSIB, talking us through as to how did you get it so wrong? And that's going to be the looming and lingering question as the story of APSA and its CEO continues to develop.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.